Welcome to Manufacturing Talk Radio, the only show that takes a look at the obstacles and opportunities open to small to mid-sized enterprises that manufacture here in America. Brought to you by All Metals and Forge Group, with your hosts, Tim Grady and Lou Wise.
Good afternoon, Lou, and welcome everyone to Manufacturing Talk Radio. How are you doing today, Lou?
Doing great. It's going to turn into a short week for me. I'm going to be away for next week's show, and I'll be talking to you from Key West.
Oh, geez, he's doing another remote. I got to figure out how to do one of those.
Yeah,
the senior guy gets all the remotes.
We'll figure it out by next week. Let me give you what's happening
in the world last week.
Well, last week when we were here, we spoke with QPS Employment Group, who's one of the largest staffing agencies, certainly in the Midwest. They have 30 offices. And it was interesting conversation talking about the employment issue in the United States and the graying of America and not being able to get trained people and so on. So they did discuss everything basically from staffing to HR issues. Very informative information, and I would highly recommend anyone who's running an HR area to go back to that show. It was last week's show. It was QPS Employment Group, and it was terrific. The big news this week is, and it's coming, we should actually have a drum roll, a little bit of Manufacturing Day, the fourth annual meeting of events throughout the United States promoting manufacturing. It's going to be held in schools and colleges and manufacturing plants and libraries and cafeterias and anywhere they can set up to show young folks about manufacturing and that it's no longer necessarily the greasy, dog-tired end-of-the-day event, and it's really a major opportunity where money can be made and long-term employment can be guaranteed. As of this morning, they have 1,488 events in the United States, and this takes place on Friday. And it'll last for a month. It's a national event. It's becoming a national event. Many states are doing it for the whole month. And we are going to be having a special show, which we've never done on a Thursday. It's going to be a live show this week at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we're going to be talking to the three founders of the Manufacturing Day event, and it's really huge, and we are one of the endorsers of the event, and so everybody tune into it. Let's give them a lot of support for manufacturing. Tim?
We have a very exciting guest today. I look forward to introducing Dr. Eloise Young. She's Senior Program Manager at Nine Sigma, and I'll ever explain to everyone what Nine Sigma is. She earned her PhD in organic chemistry from MIT, which tells me really smart, and today leads innovation programs on behalf of one of the world's leading firms in the area of open innovation. Welcome to the show, Eloise. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Tim.
Good. Two things I'd like you to introduce to our listeners. What is Nine Sigma, and what is open innovation?
So those two really do go hand in hand, because it's hard to explain what Nine Sigma does without an introduction into what open innovation is. So I'll start by saying that Nine Sigma is a leader in open innovation, and that we've been around since the year 2000. We help our clients in a number of ways, and we do this by helping our clients expand their networks. And really at the heart of it, that is what open innovation is all about. Open innovation is going outside of yourself. And yourself can be your research group, it can be your company, it can be the consortium of which you're a member, but it's going outside your known network to try to find solutions to your problems. And, you know, going outside your known network, well, how does somebody do that? And, you know, there are a lot of ways. You can go to conferences and network with people that you've never met with before, et cetera. But there are formalized ways of doing it, and Nine Sigma is one of those companies that can help clients push back those boundaries.
Okay, and I know there's another term that we're going to get into today called Nine Sight. And that's for the listening audience, SIGHTS, Nine Sights. Eloise, what is Nine Sights?
So, great question, because actually, even for people who are familiar with who Nine Sigma is and what Nine Sigma does, there's often confusion. Nine Sights is the open innovation platform. It is the destination online where we interact with the general public. And so our website, if you're interested in sort of seeing what that looks like, it's Nine Sights, NineSigma, dot Nine Sigma, which is also spelled out, .com. So this location is where we list all of the current projects that are open. And if a project has recently closed, you can go and look to see if there are any results that have been posted yet. Sometimes for innovation contests, we'll announce who the winners are. If you are interested in responding to a particular project with a proposal, then that is where you would go to do that. You can read up on who some of the different clients are that we have right now and what some of the different problems are. And the problems that show up at our website can really range in breadth from different industrial sectors to different technical disciplines. And it also can range in terms of looking for an immediate solution that can be used right away to looking for something that's more conceptual that might be developed in collaboration with a sponsor for next generation work. So it really covers a broad gamut of things.
Okay, so let me see, because this sounds exciting, if I understand this. So there's a website, NineSights, S-I-G-H-T-S dot com, where I can go and post my problem, if you will, and then other people come in and look at the issue and offer their suggestions or insights. Is that right?
So that is one way in which it works. And I think that so there's the way that Nine Sigma works with our clients is that our clients come to us and they say, you know, we have a problem with X, Y, and Z. We want to find a new way to make it, or we need a different plastic, or we need a new packaging solution. And they would talk with us about what an ideal solution would look like, what are things that are probably not going to be a good fit for them, and then we'll work with them to help frame the problem in a way that would be helpful to the general community, and then we post it at the website. So those are problems that are seeking solutions. But the reverse is true, too. There are a lot of really clever people out there. There are a lot of small startups that have very interesting technologies. So you could sort of frame it as a solution in search of a problem. And there is a part of the website at ninesights.ninesigma.com which is dedicated to that, which is where you have an interesting technology and you might say, well, we think it could be used for these different purposes, and then you post it. And then if somebody is interested in learning more, they can, through the Nine Sights platform, interact with you. And then if you determine that there is something that's worth moving forward with, then we'll help effect an introduction.
Okay. I also understand, because we had a chance to chat before the show, that although the phrase open innovation may be new to our listeners' ears, the concept is a couple of centuries old. Can you share with our listeners what the British did with open innovation?
Yes, absolutely. So open innovation, the term, was coined by Henry Chesbrough. He wrote a series of books, and the term open innovation as a business practice has really been used extensively in the last decade or so. But the actual practice of it has been around for literally hundreds of years. And the example that you're referring to is the Longitude Prize. So in 1714, the British government launched the Longitude Prize. And at that time, there was not a way to accurately navigate if you were not within sight of land. And so, you know, you could determine your latitude by looking at the height of the sun relative to the horizon at noon. But figuring out longitude, that was really hard for them to do if they couldn't be within sight of land. And this had a lot of implications. So for ships, and a lot of the commerce occurred by shipping back then, for ships that were making long trips, there was a huge economic incentive to making sure that they arrived safely, not to mention the human factor. I mean, it's a disaster to lose all hands on board. And the government recognized this and said, great, we're willing to offer £20,000, which is worth more than £20 million today. So that was a staggering amount of money. The government said, we'll offer £20,000 to whoever could accurately navigate to within so many nautical miles. So if you could determine your position within so many nautical miles, and I believe it was like 30 nautical miles, they would award £20,000. And during the lifetime of this Longitude Prize, there were a number of people who submitted their technologies. And the winner was a guy named John Harrison, and he had a way to accurately tell time at sea. So it's not necessarily evident how telling time accurately at sea could help you determine longitude, but if you think about the time zones, so every time you move so far across in longitude, you know, you either gain an hour or lose an hour depending on which direction you're moving in. So being able to tell the time at sea and combining that with latitude would actually allow you to accurately position yourself in the open waters. And so he won, and this was a great example of open innovation. This is called an innovation contest, where you award a prize for a technology. And what's really great about it is the winning technology did not come from somebody who was a navigator, who was a professional seafaring person, who was a geographer. It came from something that looks like it's an unrelated field, timekeeping. And at Nine Sigma, we find that that is the case for many of the solutions that we help our clients find, that sometimes the best solution comes from unexpected places, from adjacent technologies, from different industrial sectors where just a modification occurs and now suddenly it will work in an automotive environment instead of in a dairy environment. So this is a great example, both in terms of the fact that open innovation is something that has been around for a long time, and in terms of the fact that it shows how sometimes looking for the answer where you always look is not necessarily going to get you where you want to go.
That's great. Okay, and one of the things I'm going to have you share with our listeners in the second half of the show is the relationship between sensors on automobiles and dairy cows. So I'm sure they'll be interested in hearing that one. But there are some myths that surround open innovation, and I know the one that pops into my head is if I have this great idea, you know, my intellectual property, am I losing control of it by, you know, talking to the people at the bus stop?
So, yes, that is one of several common myths. And, you know, the answer is that it is a myth. So for Nine Sigma, our business model is that we actually don't work with confidential information. We're here to help somebody expand their network. We're here to make the connections. So what that means is that when we are putting out a request for, you know, a solution to a problem, were very explicit in saying that if you respond to this, we want to hear what you have to say, but we don't want you to tell us any confidential or enabling information. And a lot of people will come back and say, well, how can I tell you anything meaningful? And the object is to get your idea, your company, in front of the sponsor. The idea isn't necessarily at this stage to actually win a contract. So what we're looking for is a top-level description of why you think your technology is a good fit. Maybe show us some data. It can be redacted if that's necessary, but data can be pretty compelling. And if the sponsor for this project thinks that these introductory proposals are interesting, they will talk to one or more of them in the hopes of finding something that's really interesting, at which point then people will enter into non-confidential agreements and, you know, the lawyers get involved. But the idea is to have a way to make those introductions without getting all tangled up with IP. So for the guy who's got a really interesting idea, you know, we coach people all the time on this. If he were to call us and say, I think I have a great idea, but I don't understand how to write it, we would help him through that process and help him see the best way to present what his idea is so that the connection to the problem can be clearly made without giving away his special sauce, if you will.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that intellectual property and the concerns about that, which you just addressed, is one of the myths. What are the other myths that are out there, Eloise?
So I think that other myths that are out there are for companies that are considering starting or dipping their toe into open innovation. You know, why would they want to do that? We have great engineers or great scientists. We don't need to go outside. And the answer is, of course you have great engineers. That's why you're a successful company or a great scientist. But the thing is that you don't actually hire all of the world's smartest people. There are a lot of people in the world. So sometimes somebody else is going to come up with the terrific idea that's going to help you get over the edge. So open innovation is just an extra tool in the toolbox. It's not meant to be a replacement for internal activities. It's meant to help broaden your bandwidth. It's meant to augment your existing activities. And so the idea that it could be replacing or outsourcing some internal internal initiatives is definitely a myth. And the other thing that's important to realize is that actually not all problems can be solved by open innovation. Just like sometimes a hammer isn't the right tool for everything. You need a different tool sometimes. This is true also for open innovation.
In forging, we just use hammers. So lots of hammers for Lou to make his parts. In a few moments, we're going to take a commercial break, but I just want to see if there is any other myth out there that you want to address, Eloise, before we go to a break.
Well, let's see. So we've talked about how open innovation is something that's meant to sort of expand your horizons, and we've talked about how intellectual property is something that, you know, you always deal with it, and it's not like we're asking you to give away something. And in fact, you know, in most open innovation scenarios, a lot of protection is put in place, particularly because the sponsor doesn't want to be embroiled in some sort of litigation as a result of this. They want to move forward with a productive relationship. Let's see, what are some other things that I think could crop up?
I think those are the big ones. I have a quick question. In the corporate environment, medium-sized company, manufacturing, and just who we're addressing a lot of our shows directly to, would open innovation be advisable in a situation where you pull from your employee base open discussions, the open suggestion box, if you would, is that something that makes good sense?
So, Lou, just to be sure that I'm understanding, I mean, open innovation covers a lot of things. It sounds like what you're asking specifically about is ideation and whether or not you can cull your own internal resources for new and different ideas. Is that what you're asking?
That's correct.
So, of course you can, and a lot of companies do with varying levels of success. And that's definitely one path forward. Ideation is a tough thing. So if you look at the sort of breadth of problems, they run across a continuum. So some of them are very, very specific. I need to find a square-shaped, you know, doodicky that will solve this problem. Some of them are very conceptual. We need a better idea for how to market this. And, you know, everything falls in between. So for things that are very, very specific and that are very pressing, it's easy to convey the urgency and to convey exactly what it is that you're looking for and what a solution could be like. For something like an idea, well, a lot of people will say, I'll know a good idea when I see it or when I hear it, which may or may not be true, but that's not really very helpful if you are actively trying to find an idea. So certainly crowdsourcing and, you know, culling your internal resources to come up with a good idea, that's a form of crowdsourcing. You know, that is something that you can do, but that's a very limited pool. Even the largest company has essentially a fixed limited pool. So by doing that, but going the one step further and looking for ideas worldwide, you have way more ideas to choose from, and who knows where that could lead you. Did that answer your question, Lou?
And then some. Thank you.
Okay.
Tim, I think we're going to be cutting to a commercial moment.
Let's take a quick commercial break.
Manufacturing Talk Radio will be right back.
American Crane and Equipment Corporation in Douglasville, Pennsylvania is a leader in specialized cranes, hoists, and material handling equipment for industries including aerospace, nuclear, oil and gas, transit, construction, and waste handling. Call 877-877-6778 or visit americancrane.com. That's americancrane.com or 877-877-6778.
When you use the Premier Rewards Gold Card from American Express, the rewards points can keep on multiplying. Buy 3 with triple points on airfare. Buy 2 with double points on gas and groceries. And a single point for pretty much every other dollar you spend on the card. Then, start choosing from over 1 million rewards to redeem all those points. Apply today and the annual fee for the first year is on us. Call 1-800-AXP-GOLD or visit AXPGOLD.com. The annual fee for the card is $175. See terms, conditions, and restrictions at AXPGOLD.com.
All Metals and Forge Group is an ISO 9001 AS and EN 9100 manufacturer of open die forgings and seamless rolled rings in alloy, carbon, stainless and tool steels, aluminum, copper, titanium, and nickel alloys. Visit us at steelforge.com or call 800-600-9290.
Welcome back to Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Welcome back to our listeners, and we are talking with Dr. Eloise Young, who is talking to us about open innovation. And I teased you a bit in the previous segment. We want to talk about another example, which I thought was quite fun when we talked with Eloise before the show. And, you know, the car manufacturers have sensors now on the backs of cars and the front of cars so that when you're texting and driving, which you shouldn't be doing, and you don't see the car in front of you slowing down or stopping, the front sensors sense that distance and speed disparity, and they apply the brakes for you. Now, I would have thought that the bright automotive engineers in Detroit would have come up with that little invention, but I understand, Eloise, it has something to do with dairy cows. You want to explain that to our listeners?
Absolutely. And this is another example of how, you know, sometimes the solution to your problem comes not from your field, but from an unexpected or adjacent location. So in this particular case that you're talking about, the automotive client was looking for a sensor, and they were looking for a sensor that would help to monitor real time the health of a certain fluid that was within the car. And the Nine Sigma ran the project for this client, and the solution that they eventually moved forward with was a technology that had been developed for use at a dairy farm. And in particular, the dairy farm is real-time constantly monitoring the quality of the milk that's flowing through the system. So, you know, once it's collected from the cow, and then as it gets processed, and then before it leaves the dairy farm itself, there's a constant flow of information. And that technology was what was adapted and modified for use by the automotive industry. And, you know, it's a really interesting example, because at the heart of it, the issue is sensor technology, and then, you know, some of the constraints is it's a fluid, you want to know in real time what the health of that liquid is, et cetera. But it didn't actually have to do with the automotive sector. But for the automotive group, you know, they think of it because they're up against these problems day in and day out, so their focus narrows. So sometimes it's hard for them to step away and say, well, okay, what are other places that might have problems that are like this? And that's part of what Nine Sigma brings to the equation, is that when we talk with our clients, we try to help them take that step back and say, okay, so what really is the heart of the issue here, and what are some other ways that we could look at this? You know, another great example of this, because I know that this was it tickled your fancy, so to speak, because it was such a strange, incongruous combination. But, you know, another great example of something like this is we had another client who had moved to a new, more sustainably sourced packaging material, film over packaging. And what they discovered once they started using it actually in the line was that the inks, which had been optimized for the previous material, they didn't necessarily always register properly, and they didn't always dry quite fast enough. And so they were having a higher percentage of rejects, so to speak. And so they were looking for a way to resolve this issue. And we ran a project for this client. And one of the really interesting things that came back from it was this person who wrote back and said, okay, I don't necessarily have an immediate solution, but I can offer you my expertise. For many years, I was an extremely successful counterfeiter. I was eventually caught. I served time, and I now run a legitimate printing business. However, my past experience as a counterfeiter, and many of you probably realize this, but most of the printed currencies around the world outside of the United States are not actually printed on paper or fiber. They're printed on polymers. And so he said, my extensive experience in matching inks with polymer bases to create finished products, you know, allows me a breadth of expertise that would be difficult to rival. So, you know, definitely an unexpected connection, yes?
Yes, clearly.
I'm surprised that's it's legal that he can be near a printing press.
Well, you know, he had paid his dues and was the purveyor of a legitimate business, and, you know, went to great pains to assure the client of this, the sponsor of this. So you know, so sometimes what I'm saying is that the expertise that you're seeking is something that you would be hard pressed to find on your own. So open innovation is about helping you find those connections that your existing network can't help you find.
Well, clearly, I don't think we have any counterfeiters on the staff here at the station, so we won't look in that direction. But 3D printing, Eloise, is something that is coming on the scene, or what's called additive manufacturing. And this is going to change the world a bit. But what is the GE 3D printing production quest?
So, as you said, 3D printing has really arrived, so to speak. You know, it is used as a standard for prototyping across many industries, but a lot of companies are looking at the potential of 3D printing for manufacturing as opposed to for just demoing and prototyping. And GE is one of these companies. So GE is interested in understanding how the current landscape is for 3D printing with refractory metals. And refractory metals are they're a class of metals that they share a number of characteristics. So refractory metals such as tungsten or molybdenum or rhodium, these metals are very high melting. They tend to be very dense, and they're also quite brittle. And so that combination makes them hard to work with. But they also are used in a lot of high-performance situations. For this particular printing production quest, GE was interested in understanding what is the current state of the art for using 3D printing to create highly precise, very small parts out of refractory metals, such as tungsten. And, you know, the long-term goal, of course, is to perhaps be able to manufacture components for medical devices, for jet engines, for a number of different business units that GE has, for making these things out of 3D printing methods as opposed to traditional manufacturing methods. So they worked with us we worked with them to help them find what they were looking for. So initially when we started to talk with them, they said, well, we want to understand what the state of the art is for this. We want to understand what the landscape looks like, et cetera. And by talking with them, what we realized that they really wanted to do was they wanted to actually get their hands on some samples so that they could see for themselves what the state of the art looks like. It's one thing to read somebody's report, but it's quite a different thing to be able to have a number of different samples made by different techniques and to be able to compare them in an apples-to-apples fashion. And so this printing production quest, which is what we would call an innovation contest, ran out in two phases. In the initial phase, we put the call out to say, hey, if you have expertise in 3D printing with refractory metals, we would love to hear from you. You know, GE is the sponsor of this, and there is the potential to develop a business relationship with GE. You know, send us a short proposal that talks to us about your technology and perhaps would share with us an image of maybe your best work so that we have an understanding of, for you, what is the limit of what you can achieve. And in addition, GE had put together a diagram of a test coupon, which they were interested in seeing made by different techniques. And so we received a number of submissions back from groups around the world that said that, you know, they thought they had the right expertise, they thought they had technology that would be able to to meet the criteria. And as a result of this, GE read through all of these submissions and they picked the top 10. And the top 10, they said, okay, we think you guys are really, really interesting. And if you're interested in participating, in addition to giving you, you know, a cash prize for participating in this, we'd like to give you a development package. And the development package will include, you know, a certain amount of tungsten powder. So everybody would have the same tungsten powder to work with. And here's the CAD drawings and the specifics for the part that we would like you to make, which was just a test coupon. It was a grid series that was getting smaller and smaller. And then these are the tolerances. These are criteria by which your test coupons will be evaluated. And then those 10 groups had a fixed number of days from receipt of the tungsten powder to turn around test coupons. So what was really interesting about this was that the participation in this was global. GE was particularly gratified because of the 10 finalists that they chose, only one was located in North America. The other nine were located in Europe, in China. So, you know, to them, it validated the fact that they were getting access into areas that they might not otherwise have had the ability to reach into. So at the end of this, they received a series of test coupons. They were able to do a side-by-side evaluation of these test coupons. And, you know, the coupons were not necessarily, they were not compared against each other. They were compared against what the ideal, you know, the ideal measurements, the ideal tolerances should be. And three winners were selected. And so these three winners were all located in Europe. There was EOS, which the headquarters is in Germany, although the lab that produced the test coupon was located in Finland. There is a company called LayerWise, located in Belgium. And then the third winner was PlanC, SE Innovation Services, located in Austria. And so these three companies each produced test coupons that were the closest to the ideal measurements. And GE was really very pleased with these results.
That is a fascinating story. I ran across an interesting story myself recently about a race car company that designed engines. And race cars are quite capable of producing oil pressures up to 10,000 pounds per square inch. And in this particular race car engine, they were blowing the oil pump because it could only withstand 7,500 pounds per square inch. And they took on the design, and they solved the problem, the engineers did. But they worked for 2.5 years trying to create the oil pump and couldn't do it. And then they got into kind of an open innovation mindset and started looking other places where they might find another way to produce it. And 3D printing turned out to be their answer. They went to a company in the state of Washington who produced the oil pump that could withstand this pressure in 5.5 hours. So
wow,
I'm fascinated.
That's amazing.
It's incredible. After 2.5 years of failures.
I'll bet they didn't charge enough.
So it's amazing what 3D printing is doing. What do you see 3D printing doing, Eloise? To, you know, one of the concerns I have, and we're going to probably address this after a break, is the small manufacturer who puts out, you know, short run unique parts. I'm going to be interested in what the impact of 3D printing is on them. But for right now, we're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be back shortly.
Manufacturing Talk Radio will be right back.
All Metals and Forge Group manufactures open die forgings in blocks, hubs, shafts, flanges, cylinders, gear blanks, and custom forge shapes, including seamless rolled rings in alloy, carbon, stainless and tool steels, aluminum, nickel alloys, copper and titanium for parts and assemblies in aerospace, oil and gas exploration, defense, machinery, transportation, shipbuilding, energy and power, pulp and paper, and many other industries. Visit steelforge.com or call 800-600-9290.
It's no secret that manufacturers are having trouble filling jobs. Now, with ThomasNet's new job board, help is on the way. For manufacturers, ThomasNetJobs.com is the go-to resource to recruit new talent. Post your jobs and get in front of thousands of potential employees. Or, if you're looking for a new job or you want to reinvent yourself, ThomasNetJobs.com offers exciting opportunities from the shop floor to the C-suite in supply chain management, engineering, production, or sales. Remember, ThomasNetJobs.com.
Welcome back to Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Welcome back. This is Tim Grady, and we're speaking with Dr. Eloise Young, a PhD out of MIT and now working with Nine Sigma. And Eloise, I threw a question out to you earlier just before the break, this 3D printing and additive manufacturing. Do you see that having a particularly serious impact on the small or mid-sized manufacturer whose specialty is short runs, or they just need to jump into it?
Well, hopefully they've been seeing the writing on the walls. I mean, when I said earlier that 3D printing had arrived, it wasn't like it arrived overnight. It's the momentum for this has been building for several years now. If you went to Rapid back in at the beginning of the summer in Detroit, and you walked on the expo floor, it was incredible to see the array of 3D printing equipment, and ranging from something that you could buy to put in a high school engineering lab to something that a world class company might invest in. And so for these small and medium sized businesses that specialize in short runs, they have been aware of the fact that this technology has been slowly creeping into the marketplace, and they probably themselves have been using it as a way of prototyping and making sure that the fast turnaround on their short runs is going to be met, because that is something that, the price has come down for these entry-level 3D printers as well. So, it's like anything else. It's a slow evolution. It's not that it's happening overnight, but I suspect that for a lot of these companies, they are in the process of evaluating and perhaps changing their strategy to adapt to the changing times.
Well, now I'm going to suspect that Nine Sigma would like to have lots of bright people connecting with them. And is that what Nine Sites is all about, Eloise?
Yes. So Nine Sites is all about having people come and see what other people are doing, see whether or not what they're doing could help somebody else solve their problems. We're passionate about making these connections. And the only way these connections can occur meaningfully is if people know that somebody might have a need for their technology, or if people know that a certain technology is already extant. And so, driving people to visit the website regularly, to see what are the new problems that are being posted, to, become part of the community, that's something that we feel offers a strong benefit to everybody.
It certainly sounds like a fascinating area for engineers to explore who want to take their mental skill sets beyond their day-to-day work and say, well, I wonder if there's something else out there I can noodle over and help somebody solve. Would that be the kind of audience you'd like to have at Nine Sites?
Well, that's one element of the audiences that we'd like to have. Our audience is wide. Our network is comprised of individual independent inventors, academic research labs. Maybe the academic research lab professor spins off a technology into his own startup company. Maybe it's a two-man startup company in somebody's garage. Maybe it's a peer company. You would be surprised how many times peer companies have technologies that they're either trying to leverage into non-competing fields, or that they developed but are not using, and so they would like to see if they can somehow create value from intellectual property that's not being actively used. So if they could license it to another company in a non-competing field, that would be terrific. And anytime we have these types of different interactions, peer-to-peer in a non-competing field, or some small startup with a giant company, we're excited to help make those connections happen. So the community is is broad, and it could be an engineer. It could be an engineer who sometimes responds to a Nine Sigma request as a member of the engineering firm where he works, or sometimes he responds as an independent contributor because he just has an idea that has come to him and he thinks might be the path forward.
Well, I'm glad you used the term peer-to-peer because I wasn't sure if I was hearing the word P-E-E-R or T-I-E-R. We oftentimes talk about Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3 suppliers to some of the major OEMs. So I just wanted to be sure that I understood, and then I finally heard you say peer-to-peer, what term was being shared there with the audience. So that's very helpful. Eloise, is there anything else about either Nine Sigma or Nine Sites or Open Innovation that you would like to share with our listeners as we begin to wrap up the show today?
So I think the thing that's important to know about Open Innovation is that it's a practice. It's not one thing. So just like the field of medicine isn't one thing, there are all kinds of different components that make up the field of medicine. The same is true for open innovation. And I had said at one point that not every problem can be successfully addressed by open innovation. But the corollary to that is some problems can be successfully addressed by various facets of open innovation, and it's up to the sponsor to determine which is going to be the best possible outcome. And so what I mean when I say that is that, we've talked a lot about innovation contests, the Longitude Prize, the GE 3D Printing Production Quest, but there are other ways that open innovation occurs. And so I mentioned briefly the idea of crowdsourcing. And, you know, there are a lot of companies that do crowdsourcing. I think I had mentioned in a previous conversation to you that Lay's Potato Chips, for example, Frito-Lay, every summer they launch a couple of different mystery flavors, or maybe they're not mystery flavors, they're just their new flavors, and you're asked to go online to vote. So that's crowdsourcing. Quirky. Quirky is a very interesting company. A lot of their ideas are refined, and product design occurs through a crowdsourcing platform. So crowdsourcing is another open innovation tool. We also, Nine Sigma does what we call request for proposal, an RFP. So that's something where if you're looking for a very specific solution to a very pressing problem, that's how we get that message out. So we try to reduce the problem down to its core and say, you know, rather than saying we need something that will only fit in the doorway, the box is this big and it has to be able to take blue paint and it has to be able to operate in temperatures between 70, we're like, well, you know, you guys have a bunch of very smart scientists and engineers. Let's strip this down to really what the core of the problem is. And sometimes it turns, you guys can figure out how to make it blue. You guys can figure out how to reconfigure it so it fits inside the door. What is the core of the issue? And then we're like, you want to control vibration, or you want to manage, whatever the heart of the issue is. And so we'll work with them to launch an RFP that's looking for a specific technical solution. So open innovation has many faces, and sometimes you can get to an endpoint by running an innovation contest, by crowdsourcing, by running an RFP. But the answer that you get back from each of those is going to be a little bit different because the group that it appeals to is going to be slightly different. And so, we'll talk with a client to say, well, what really is your definition of success? What is it that's going to make you more excited? Would you rather go this way or that way? And then help them understand which would be the preferred tool to use in any given situation.
Eloise, this topic is really mind-boggling. And I'm sure that there's a lot of people that would like to be able to see and hear more about what you're doing. So two things. I'd like to know how you would suggest listeners either participate with you or get in touch with you. Give us your URL address. If there's a specific place to get certain information, kindly give that as well. Let's give them a open door to Nine Sigma.
Absolutely. So if you would like to learn more about Nine Sigma, how we do business, and, you know, read some more of these interesting case stories that we were happy to share, then in that case, I invite you to go to www.ninesigma.com. And that's spelled out N-I-N-E-S-I-G-M-A. So that's our corporate site, and it introduces you to the company. It talks to you about how we do business, and it provides a number of interesting white papers. If you're more interested in seeing what are the types of actual projects that we are running right now, seeing what some of the breadth of the various projects, the types of innovation contests, the types of RFPs, seeing what other technology offerings other people might be posting at our site, in that case, then I invite you to visit our open innovation platform, which is www.ninesigma.com.
Well, I think there'll be a lot of information that one could make a case for themselves getting involved in this very interesting methodology. Tim?
I have to ask, Eloise, just a kind of a question that's probably now on everybody's mind. Is this expensive?
Well, I guess it depends who you are. If you are a large multinational corporation, no, this is not going to be expensive. On the other hand, if you're a very small company, by those lights, this is expensive. So I think that most of our clients are larger corporations. However, within the state of Ohio, so Nine Sigma is headquartered in Ohio, although we also have offices throughout the world. We have offices in Japan, in Australia, in Germany, Korea, et cetera. But in Ohio, we are running a program with the state of Ohio to help introduce these open innovation services to small and medium-sized enterprises. So we're hoping to launch a similar program in several other states, but certainly within Ohio, if you are located here and your headquarters is here, then through this program, you can work with Nine Sigma and have part of the cost of Nine Sigma's fees underwritten by the state. And so that's a great way to get introduced to some of the tools of open innovation and to see how it can affect change within your company.
That's certainly a very clever way for Ohio to get the benefit of some innovation. And you know, one of the other things I picked up, I think, on your website was a lot of people sense that the guy who owns the patent is the one who makes the most money. Is that necessarily true?
I think the answer is no, but before I say that, I'd want to know a little bit more about the context for that. So the guy who owns the patent, is this in general, or is this for a specific type of invention, or...
Well, I got the sense that some people think if I own the patent, now I'm going to be the king, but isn't it really a speed to market issue?
So I think that there are a number of things at play. So speed to market obviously is important. I mean, if you look at the pharmaceutical industry, it takes them so long to get approval to get new drugs on the market that the remaining lifespan for the patent is limited. So, you know, there's a huge timing dynamic that's involved there. I think that in other industries, time to market maybe is less of an issue. I think that finding other ways to create value from the intellectual property beyond just the marketing of that one item itself is something that's key to really maximizing the value of that intellectual property.
Have you run across any Eloise that somebody had a widget for X, and you helped them identify, you know, Y and Z, other places that they could use it? Is that kind of an open innovation event?
Absolutely. You know, this would fall under the example that I was giving earlier of where we help them recognize how their technology might be a good fit for a field that they hadn't considered, and then they can work with the sponsor to modify their technology. So that, you know, this the example that we were talking about earlier about the sensor that's used in dairy farms that was modified for an automotive application is a perfect example of that.
Okay, so all of you listeners out there who have got technology on the shelf in the barn, and specifically I'm talking to the one I heard about who's got the carburetor that helps get 180 miles to the gallon, it's time to bring it out from the dusty shelf into the light of day and see what we can change in the world around us. This is a fascinating discussion, and it certainly is something I think even, you know, the middle market manufacturer ought to take a look at, because I think there's an enormous benefit to them to be able to take their product to other marketplaces, find other uses for it. And I suspect, and having talked to some manufacturers, there are lots of engineers in those operations that invent neat stuff. And then it literally sits on a shelf and gathers dust because nobody knows what to do with it. You were mentioning earlier a solution looking for a problem. Should those people be reaching out to Nine Sigma and saying, hey, you know, we got this neat little widget over here. Got anybody with a problem?
Well, okay, so we do have a part of our website, part of Nine Sites, is dedicated to what we call technology offers. So those are the people who have interesting technologies to offer that could be the solution to somebody else's problem. And so, you know, that's definitely one path to pursue. But the other one, and it's a lot of work, but I think that it's something that if you're very invested in it, it's worth the time and effort, is to stay abreast with the wide range of projects that are open at Nine Sigma and try to see how your technology might be the right fit. So sometimes it's clear that gap will never be bridged, but sometimes you just need somebody to present it in a different way and you suddenly realize, oh, well, that's a surface modification problem. Actually, I know how to do surface modification, and if I just rejigger X, Y, and Z, this might be a workable solution.
Okay, so all of the bright minds out there need to take a look at. And is it really the nine sites they want to look at, or the Nine Sigma site that they want to look at?
So thanks for bringing that up again, because I think that is an important thing to clarify. So the nine sites, ninesites.ninesigma.com, is the place to go if you want to read about the problems that are currently open. If you want to post a technology, respond to an RFP, learn more about an innovation contest. If you think you might be interested in working with Nine Sigma and learning more about, you know, our business values, learning about who we are and how we do business, then I encourage you to go and visit ninesigma.com. And that's our corporate site, which is more about information and building relationships with new partners, as opposed to the nine sites, which is really the nuts and bolts of what we do every day, which is trying to help our clients find solutions to their problems.
Well, Eloise, I want to thank you. We're in our final moments, and again, I want to thank you for joining us. And perhaps we can have further discussions down the road. I do want to point out that this show will be on our website, mfgtalkradio.com, in about 2 hours. And we are also going to replay the show at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time today, for those who may not have heard the whole show. I think it's certainly a worthwhile endeavor to listen to it. It's fascinating information. Tim?
Thanks again, Eloise. We really appreciate you being on the show.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk with you guys. It was a pleasure.
And we will talk with everyone in the very near future. Again, keep MFGday.com in mind, Manufacturing Day, and that's it for Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Thanks for joining us on Manufacturing Talk Radio. You can hear our next broadcast each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at MFGTalkRadio.com.